On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership development. It is broadcast live from WEBR Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone. WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. And joining us on the Commons today is one of my favorite people in the whole wide world, and that's Representative Julio Robina from Florida. Julio, thank you so much for spending Valentine's Day with us here on the Commons.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you for that nice introduction. And I just want to say, to me, it's a pleasure to be here and share with all your listeners all the latest, steps that we're taking to try to make these types of associations a better place for everybody.
Let me ask you something personal, Julio, before we even get started on the show. Are you always this upbeat and positive and energetic and dynamic?
Well, you know, I guess it comes with being down in South Florida, where it's always sunny and nice and the spirits are always high. And we're raised to believe that we can do anything in this type of atmosphere. And believe me, that's part of the reason why we're always so upbeat and so positive.
Well, you certainly are. Every time I talk to you, you're really positive and you know, you're so full of this joie de vivre, you know. We're really happy to be here. And that's exactly what the homeowners in Florida need, is someone with a can-do attitude, and you certainly have it. You have been going all over the state, listening to your constituents and hearing their stories.
That's correct.
And you want to tell us some of the
stories? Let me tell you what we've been doing. For several months, we traveled throughout the state of Florida. We had they were considered condominium and homeowner association meetings. They were hearings. The reason that we were traveling around the state is because I had asked the Speaker of the House if I could serve as a chairman of a committee that was going to investigate a lot of the local problems and complaints that we were getting down here in South Florida. And he basically told me that there had been so many complaints throughout the years and nobody really had championed something like this that he would approve it. So he made me the chairman, allowed me to choose seven other members, all representatives from the Florida House of Representatives. And we were given the task to go out and investigate throughout the whole state of Florida what the problems are, what are the concerns, what are people complaining about that live in either condo or homeowner association environment, and not only to investigate it, but also to come back with a report that basically stated what the common problems were, also with a list of recommendations, and more importantly, with a new piece of legislation that would be introduced this coming session in order to try to change these laws that were causing problems or that really needed to be looked at. And that was basically what we were commissioned to do.
And so this is in addition to all the other stuff that you had to do. You actually took this on. You volunteered, if you will, to take on this task of traveling around the country when obviously, there had been a number of complaints in the past, and nothing was done about it.
That's correct, Sue. And you got to understand that we do a number of things. It was probably one of the most time-consuming things that I've ever done. And later on, I'm going to share with you the report that I provided to the Speaker on January 21st. But, you know, the reason we do this, Sue, because, you know, we are elected officials, and we're supposed to do what the people ask us to do. We're their public servants. And you know, a lot of times, you know, people get elected and they go up there and they do what they want to do. But this is something that folks down here in the state of Florida, especially in my county, have asked us that this is what they want us to do, which is to address this issue which is home ownership, which, you know, I will state this several times during our discussion, it's impacting probably 20-30% of the people down in the state of Florida, and by the year 2010, 40% of our population down here in the state of Florida is going to live in either a condo or homeowner association environment. So you cannot sit and turn your back from this anymore. And, you know, and being a legislator now in my second year, I think that this is probably the issue that most needed to be addressed, you know, this year in the Florida House of Representatives.
You're on the Commons, and now you can see why I chose to have Representative Julio Rabaina join me here on Valentine's Day. Julio, you know, 40%. Now, why, and that's only 6 years away, because that's, this is 2004 already.
Actually, it's a little less than 6 years away, Shu, and why so many? Because you got to understand that what's happening in the state of Florida, any place along the coastal areas, what they're doing is they're knocking down old facilities and they're building very high-rise condominiums.
And are there any mandates at the local municipal levels requiring associations to be built?
Fortunately, they don't even get involved in that. What they basically are doing down here, and there have been some that have stood up against it, but the majority of these municipalities, due to the tax base that's created by developing these huge condominiums, are really granting them, you know, the rights to go forward and develop these type of buildings. And they have not done anything to try to limit or even get involved when it comes to the associations.
So basically, this is what, it's just the way it's evolving.
It is evolving. And another thing that we have, a type of development that we have very common here in the state of Florida, that's happening all around the state of Florida, is what they call a PUD, a planned urban development, which usually, I guess for your listeners, would be one of these walled-in communities that they build nowadays, where it's all within the community, it's self-contained. You have your guard entrance, and then you have, of course, all the common grounds and common, locations where the unit owners or the homeowners, in that case, have to pay a fee. And here we go. And I got to tell you, we have some pretty good condominium laws, meaning when I say pretty good, the number of laws that we have to regulate condominiums are high. Homeowner associations are limited to very, very few, you know, regulations at all. There's very few Florida statutes. So that is almost like starting from scratch when it comes to the homeowners associations.
Now, the hearings that you held were predominantly for condominiums, right?
For both. But the majority of the people that came out were condominium unit owners. That came out, you know, when, for instance, in Dade and Broward, they averaged anywhere from 200 to 300 people that would come out for these meetings, which is a huge number of people because we anticipated normally when we have meetings like this and the state does any type of investigations, you're lucky if you get 50 people in these rooms. And luckily, we did it in large auditoriums and universities around the state, and they came out. Shoe, bottom line is these people are frustrated. These folks that own these units, so that the numbers were pretty incredible. Especially the hardest areas were Miami-Dade County and Broward and the Palm Beach area. Those were probably the hardest areas with the most complaints.
Is that because those are more densely populated? Or?
Exactly. You have a more densely populated area of condominiums there and a lot of seniors, a lot of retirees that live in there. And I've got to tell you, I think that people take advantage of the retired folks and our seniors here in this state when it comes to condominium living.
I had a Hispanic gentleman on the show a few weeks ago, or maybe even months ago, time flies quite a bit, and he seemed to indicate that in addition to the old people who were being targeted, but it was also the minority groups, like the Hispanics who maybe do not speak or understand as well, and are finding themselves, you know, in the crosshairs of an association that's gone completely nuts.
And that's absolutely true. Unfortunately, down here, and especially in Dade and Broward County, we have a large concentration of immigrants that have moved here that live in condominiums. Either they've bought them or they're renting units, and they don't speak the language. And what becomes of that is basically a free-for-all for the associations and for lots of people that are doing whatever they want. And these folks don't have a clue what their rights are. I mean, if they can't read paperwork that's given to them and they don't even attend the meetings, there's no way for them to defend themselves or know what they should have as far as what their legal rights are.
You know, when associations first started, they were designed basically as exclusionary, and the whole idea was that they were going to keep out minorities and, you know, ethnic minorities, religious minorities, you know, all of these people, and just keep these neighborhoods really nice and pristine, clean. Of course, the courts have come in and said, hey, that's unconstitutional. The legislatures have come in, Congress has come in and said, hey, you can't do that. And they've enacted all of these laws. Yet we still see that happening, Julio. It doesn't seem to matter.
And you know what? And we probably have a worst-case scenario down here in Florida, and I guess California would probably join us with that, because we have such diversity here. We have more nationalities living in Dade and Broward, in those counties alone, than probably most states have in the entire state. And they are, these people are subject to becoming victims at times. And I got to tell you one thing. It's very sad to see that happening, and we still see it happening as we travel through different parts of the state of Florida. We had some people that were of different ethnic backgrounds, and they spoke about the issue of racism in general, and them being a minority, not even being treated the same way that the rest of the unit owners were. And now I'm talking about people who saved their hard-earned money and bought a unit. These were not even renters. These were people that owned units. It's a shame. It really is.
Well, you know, we live in a very ethnically diverse area here in the Northern Virginia area as well. I mean, the Washington metropolitan area is a rainbow of different nationalities, and I find that all the time. I mean, I'm called in by people of Hindu and Sikh and Muslim and Hispanic, and, you know, it doesn't matter. It's like these people have got to go. And you get this handful of board members who just concoct all kinds of alleged violations and cook the books. I don't know what they do, but they target these people.
So we heard comments, you know, because I also would go several evenings and my personal time, and I would go and sit in as a quiet listening spectator to some of the board meetings of some of the local associations in here. And, you know, I would never identify myself, because really, I was just there to listen. They don't allow you to speak, first of all, which is something that we're addressing. But I would sit there and listen, and I would hear comments along the lines that, you know, you let these people come in here, and these are the ones that are ruining this community.
Right.
And when I hear stuff like that, that really gets me in the gut. You know, that's really sad and depressing that in this day and age, you know, we still have to deal with that stuff. And I've got to tell you, that is such a farce, because I have seen some folks that have probably just, you know, acquired for the first time their first, you know, home, whether it's a condo or whether it's a home in one of these planned urban development units. And I got to tell you, they take pride in their units. I'm not saying there's some that don't, but these people work hard. And how quickly we forget.
Yeah, they do. They work very hard, and it's just that we've given local groups, local neighborhoods, such enormous powers, and there's absolutely no adult supervision, notwithstanding, you know, any laws, notwithstanding any court decisions. These people are allowed to do whatever it is they want to do and target their neighbors based on the fact that they don't like them, based on the fact that they're of a different religion, a different color, a different national origin. It doesn't matter. They just go right after them.
Well, the sad part about it is we've also found out that due to these types of, racial prejudices against certain groups or individuals, or just people that just don't like, a lot of board members take things very personally. They go after these folks.
Yeah, they do.
In a way that it was unheard of. We heard wars that really should have been settled in a civil courtroom that were taking place where they were fining people just because they had animosity against somebody and just
mm-hmm.
making people's life miserable in their association and in their development where they lived. It's sad, very sad what I have learned from this experience.
Well, I am glad that you saw all of this for your own, you know, from your own perspective, because, you know, if you, I'm sure that a lot of people being told that this happens, you know, in the 21st century in America, they wouldn't believe it.
Well, sure, you know what the elected officials need to do is do what we did. You know, we get so many things that people ask us to look into, and a lot of times we look into it in a way that that normally a lot of elected officials do, which they get paperwork on it, or staff may go out, or somebody will come back and tell them, you need to look at this. This is pretty bad. Well, tell me what I need to do. But I tell you, going hands-on and going out to different parts of the state, listening, here's what we need to be doing as elected officials. We need to not talk so much, and we need to listen. And that's what we did. Listen to these people that are hoping that we will help them out because they're in a predicament. We went, we listened, they told us what the problems were, and guess what? One of the greatest things also that came out of this is that these folks also came with a list of suggestions on how to make things better. So this is great. Well, what better way to address problems than government listening and also taking the time to take in some of the recommendations that these folks were presenting, which a lot of them are on the report that I submitted, and I'll share with you today.
All right. Well, let's go to the report. You know, there's a lot on the report, and I do have a copy of it here. So we can talk about it quite freely. You're on the Commons, and we're talking to Representative Julio Rabina, and we're going to be talking about the report that he just submitted, and his ideas on how to fix the problems in associations. What's the one thing, Julio, that you think is going to make the biggest impact?
The biggest impact is we here in the state of Florida have the Department of Business and Professional Regulations that handle the complaints from the unit owners. And it really is so lax because of the lack of teeth in law and the laws, the personnel that really doesn't get hands-on. So what we're recommending is something that we think will probably resolve more than half of the problems, and that's the creation of an ombudsman's office with a 5-member commission, which, again, it could be an advisory council, either elected or appointed, and we're going to get feedback from the folks on what they would like to see it comprised of. And this office, this ombudsman's office, would have the power to go on site whenever people complain that there's something going on. They'll be able to go on site, audit the statements, you know, in conjunction and work with the Department of Business and Professional Regulations. They'll be able to conduct investigations on site. They'll be able to follow up on complaints. They'll also be able to monitor board meetings and elections, which we get so many complaints about the election process.
Yeah,
they will be able to monitor the elections, and they're going to have the legal power to bring disputing parties, you know, that are unable to reach an agreement in front of them and the 5-member panel in order to, you know, force a settlement. And the ombudsman will also have the power to fine board members or, worst case scenario, remove them from office. And if any criminal activity is found, they will be working with the state attorney's office in order to help the investigation to hopefully bring, you know, misdemeanor or felony charges, depending on what is found in the associations.
If I were to drive, you know, go over the speed limit, the state would sort of haul me into court and make me comply with the law. Yet there are all kinds of violations in homeowner associations, violations of laws that you guys enacted. And yet there's absolutely none of that. Now you want to settle disputes that quite often arise out of the board members violating your laws.
That's correct.
And yet there doesn't seem to be any, hey, you're in violation of this law and you've got to come to court and explain what you did.
Well, sadly enough, as you know, a lot of times these cases will end up in civil court And the way this works, Sue, which is very interesting, is let's say you do have a personal situation and now you have complained and the Department of Business and Professional Regulation has gotten involved, but they determine that this is more of a civil matter and you're now filing a complaint against that board. You understand that as a unit owner, as a homeowner, you pay a percentage of that attorney's fees who's going to represent that association.
That's got to stop.
And now you have to go out and hire another attorney to represent you. So you talk about a catch-22 and being put in a bad situation. That's just one of the many examples that I can pose to you today on where we think it's very unfair of what's happening out there.
It is unfair. The ombudsman, now, Nevada has an ombudsman, and they've been kind of, they've had one for 5 years, and initially the first ombudsman was given absolutely no teeth.
Right.
They fired her amid a whole lot of, you know, really nastiness. They hired someone else. He was finally given some money and some staff, and he seemed to be more leaning towards the association as opposed to the individual homeowner. So the special interests kind of allowed him to stay on.
Right, and that's why I'm glad you brought that up. Because, first of all, the ombudsman's office will never work unless there are, you know, laws with teeth that he can really work with. And he has to work in conjunction with a five-member, call it a commission or advisory council, which what we're looking at is that the appointments would be unit owners around the state of Florida, in our case, not people that are part of a property management company or part of a law firm or anybody that has an interest vested in these associations.
Okay.
We think that that will create the balance needed so that there will be a fair situation.
Oh, I like it. Yes, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great because, you know, Montgomery County in Maryland has something, but, again, it's all the special interests. It's the attorneys and the manager.
Well, that's why, unfortunately, with all due respect to a lot of attorneys that, you know, that practice being an ombudsman, there has to be a check and balance.
Yes.
And I think the check and balance is making sure that that committee that goes out, these type of people are definitely folks that have been in or they're living in an association environment, understand the problems and can be sympathetic when there is a hearing or a dispute that's being trying to settle within an association.
So you really have been listening to your constituents.
We've been listening, and you know what? When I go through some of these things, you're going to find out that a lot of the issues here are common sense. I'm going to say that we should have taken a long time ago. We just never did because we were not listening, or special interests was really dominating. And I'll repeat that. I think it was that either we were not really listening or that special interest was really dominating this particular situation. And at the end of the day, nobody wanted to touch this. This was the political hot potato. But I got to tell you one thing. It's no longer that. And I'm very proud to say that every day I walk through the Capitol, I have people coming up to me wondering, how can I co-sponsor your legislation? How do I get involved with this? I need to do this. Because what I'm seeing here is more of the grassroots elected officials that are getting elected to a lot of the positions in the state of Florida that understand that this is important, that this is very important to the constituents that they represent. And I feel really, really good and honored and thrilled that they would walk up to me and say, Representative Rubino, we'd like to co-sponsor your legislation.
You know, it's funny, I got some emails here from people, you know, with questions for you. And one of the questions was, have you gotten any flack from your colleagues for taking
up?
Absolutely. But negative flack?
Yep. I was going to go ahead and tell you a little bit about the negative flack.
All right.
The negative flack that we're getting is we have a lot of attorneys that are actually elected officials, and some of them tend to side with some of the law firms that have been involved with the representation of the associations. So they feel that we're just going out too drastic as far as the changes we're recommending, because I had a report that could have been 50 pages long, Sue, We condensed it to 6 pages with 25 recommendations for improvement on the current Florida statutes. What they're concerned about is that if we make it too strict and that we're going to make it so tough and it's going to be such a tough environment to be a volunteer, that we're not going to get anybody that's going to want to volunteer as a board member any longer in any of these condominium associations. And my answer to that is that, you know, these are people which, in the state of Florida, there's a lot of people that have great associations that have never had any problems because they have integrity, they have honesty, and they do want to serve the way that the board needs them to serve. But unfortunately, we have those who do not. And
but they're only
due to
one
that situation, we have to address these current laws.
But they're one election away from having things turn around. And that's important. The industry will tell you, oh, there are all these associations that are running very smoothly. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. We don't know that. But I can tell you one thing, they're one election away. Every one of them is subject to going south.
Absolutely. I agree 100% with that.
And so what you're doing here is not necessarily being hard on the ones that may be working well right now, but you're trying to make sure that they don't go bad. Or that if they do go bad, and when they do go bad, that there's something in place to prevent it. Right?
That is absolutely correct.
What other provisions, what other recommendations would you...
Well, if I may, the report that I submitted to the Speaker of the House basically stated that this had been one of the most challenging and eye-opening experiences that I and the entire committee had ever experienced as members of the Florida House of Representatives. And one of the requests was that in order for us to be able to implement a lot of our suggestions here with changes to the Florida statute, it would, you know, require the money that, listen to what I'm going to say, that currently comes from the unit owners, because here in the state of Florida, each unit owner pays $4 each year that goes into a trust fund that is used to fund the regulation of the condo and homeowner associations through the Department of Business and Professional Regulations. In the past, the state have said, well, we don't have any more money to do this. We don't have any money to hire additional people. We don't have any money to implement ideas that have come out in the past. But every year for the past couple of years, we have been going in there and raiding that trust fund, taking the condo units owner money out of there and putting it into the general revenue to pay for other things. So I start my report by basically stating here that the first and most important thing that we as a committee must recommend is that the monies that are allocated to the trust fund that are generated by the condo unit owners be left to only serve the condo and homeowner association needs and not diverted from the account to help fund other initiatives of the state of Florida.
How can they divert that money when it's collected from certain people for a specific reason?
There we go. And this topic, I'd like to dwell on it for a couple of minutes. This is one of the problems that a lot of times happens when it's budget time in all states. There are trust funds. As elected officials, the governor, the legislature, has the right to go into those trust funds and take partial amount of the money, all of the money. They have the right to use those dollars if they claim they're not being used and are just sitting there, especially since a lot of states are having budget issues. And they will go ahead and take those, what they call is sweeping the trust fund. They sweep those trust funds, and that money goes right back into general revenue. And they are perfectly and legally able to do this. And that is one of the biggest problems, that we can come up with recommendations every day and try to implement them, but unless we use the dollars that these unit owners are currently paying into the trust fund, we could sit here and wish forever, but nothing's going to get done unless their money is left alone.
Well, you know, a lot of the activists, I guess, around the country will send me stuff and say, what do you think? This is what I'm going to be proposing. And there's always sort of a dollar amount per door, special extra assessment, whatever you want to call it, or an additional tax, basically, that would go towards funding this oversight. And I have a real problem with that, Julio,
well,
because, you know, we pay our taxes. A lot of the reason you have these associations is so that local municipal governments have a vehicle to shunt their responsibilities off onto the private sector. And now we're coming in and saying, well, guess what? Now you're paying your taxes and you're paying again for the same services. But you know what? In order for us to make sure that the laws that apply to you are enforced, we're going to have to tax you yet a third time.
And that is some of the worst situations that you can explain to the public listening. That is so, so sad. And this is where, again, the changes need to take place. This is the problems. These are the problems that we currently have. Again, we need to start somewhere. I got some good news, at least, for those that are listening. I also sit on the Appropriations Budget Committee that handles the dollars. And I was able to lobby the rest of my group during the hearings that we had and the workshop on the budget, and I have gotten them to agree to leave their money alone, to leave it where it needs to be. So this year, even though there was a recommendation by the governor to sweep $6 million out of that fund, the money will not be swept, because at the end of the day, the legislative body has to go ahead and basically approve whatever it is that the governor is requesting, or we basically said it, and then the governor has the right to go with it or veto it. But the money was saved this year for the condominium association's dollars into the trust fund.
You're listening to Representative Julio Rabina from Florida. You're on the Commons, and we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and on the Commons with me today is the dynamic representative from Florida, Julio Rabina. Julio, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you again, Sue.
By the way, I keep forgetting to do this, folks, but if you miss part of the show, you can always download it off my website. If you go to www.onthecommons.com, it will be uploaded this evening, so go ahead and download it, and you can listen to this again, because here's someone who ought to be a model for just about every elected official out there. Thank you, Julio. Thanks for all your work.
Thank you for those kind words.
We're going to get back into your recommendations, but we have a couple of emails here. You want to take those first,
absolutely,
or do you want to go
and
into
if they have any recommendations, remember that we're all ears. I'd like to hear what people have to say.
Okay, number one, and I think that this is an incredibly important one, is first I want to thank Julio Rabina for being a voice for the people suffering in Florida. I want to ask him what the most important thing the people need to do to help. In weeks to come, do we need to have protests?
Absolutely. And I am going to ask him to protest like they've never protested in their lives, because his special interest is alive and well and walking the halls at the Capitol trying to prevent anything from happening this year.
Well, it goes on. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, Ben. And I have no idea what this means, but I also want to ask him if he was shocked to see the legal giant get booed out so loudly at the public hearing in Broward County.
Actually, I without mentioning the legal giant's name.
Oh, come on, be a devil.
I will tell you that I guess that what people witnessed that day is the way people feel about certain groups and about these laws in general.
So you weren't surprised?
I was not surprised at all. I actually kind of expected it to happen.
Cool. All right. Well, there you go, Karen. There's your answer. Also got an email from a guy by the name of Steve Cumley. And I guess he's been in touch with you. He says he testified in front of your committee in September in Miami, provided you and the rest of your committee members with problems we'd experienced with the DBPR, which we outlined in our testimony. Anyway, it goes on.
Sue, let me just tell you that Steve Cromley is one of the reasons why I am doing this. I wish I had 20 Steve Cromleys. These are people that are fighting not only for their rights, but for everybody else's rights in the state of Florida. This is a man who does not let down. And he's one of the reasons why one of my proposed changes to the Florida statutes, which will protect, you know, thousands and thousands of people in the state, have been implemented into our proposed changes and will be part of our recommendations when the piece of legislation comes up in Tallahassee. And I know that I can count on people like Steve Cromley to be in Tallahassee when this comes up in front of the committees. And if I may share with you quickly, his is a horror story, where here's a gentleman who's owned a unit for a number of years, and I'm going to try to make it real quick. He's got new board members on there. They decide, just in the middle of things, that, hey, Steve, we know that you lease or rent your property out. You're a seasonal owner. You're, you know, for so many months. But guess what? We don't want you to do this anymore, so we're going to change the laws on you. You will not be allowed to do this. Now, this creates a fiscal, you know, negative impact with Mr. Cromley. And again, this is what happens. You've got a group of a few people making decisions for all the unit owners. And one of the things that we're trying to now implement, this is one of the proposed changes as a result of Steve Cromley's situation, is that issues that are voted on board members from now on that will create a fiscal impact or hardship for owner or owners must be approved and voted upon under a special election by the majority of the unit owners. And grandfathered clauses will also be considered under certain circumstances. I've seen it done in that situation. I've seen it done where people have had pets in units. All of a sudden a new board decides to say, guess what, we don't want any more pets.
Yeah.
And now here comes the hardship of having to move from a place you've owned forever. I mean, I can go on and on and on, and I want to thank Mr. Cromley, and I want to thank all those people that came out and told us about these things, how these associations, you know, and that's why they've labeled them little mafias here, you know, that they go out there and they change the rules in the middle of the game, as they say, when they want these people to abide by new rules when they bought or live in that situation because they have the luxury of enjoying that benefit, and all of a sudden they want to take it away.
Let's go back to your recommendations because we're going to be running out of time here.
Well, I'm going to try to run real quickly to some of the top ones. And
okay.
One of the things that people spoke about was the lack of awareness of potential buyers, you know, where they're not being notified that there is an association or whether there's litigation or there's other liabilities that are pending. And more importantly, that they're not being told that there may be some structural repair or major maintenance work that needs to be done. What we're doing is we're bringing back something that the state had implemented and all one year, and a year later they repealed it because a lot of special interests complained about it, and that is the buyer beware, which is a question and answer sheet that's to be given to every potential buyer at the time of a contract being signed by the realtor. And possibly, again, just reiterating it again during the closing. That's one of the things that we are definitely looking at. Other things that we're making sure is that immediate family members should not be serving on boards simultaneously. We seem to be having a lot of these problems here.
Mom and Pop, yeah, okay.
you talk about conflicts of interest, you know, this is incredible.
Yeah, oh,
then,
I know.
Then you have, you know, situation where you have the CAMs, the property management companies, or contractors that do business with these communities that have either, again, family members or personal friends, and we want there to be a form of a disclosure. If there's a conflict or the contractor is chosen and there is some relationship to board members, we just want the rest of the association to approve it. We also want to make sure that they're sticking to the three-bid process. It's one of the other things that came up here, especially down here where a lot of people continue to serve over and over again, and they're never able to be removed at times, as they say, is we're requiring that there be a two-year term limit on board members. But here's the catch on this. They can only serve for 2 years unless, if there are no other volunteers, you know, that want to serve, then the term can be extended by approval of the majority of the vote of the unit owners. So that'll hopefully get a lot of people to have an opportunity to serve and not create a long-standing problem with a person that may be there for a number of years. Here's another very important one. Down here, liens are placed on unit owners and homeowners a lot of times without a lot of prior notice. One of the things we're doing is that we are making it mandatory that liens, if they need to be placed, should not be given to unit owners with no less than 30 days notice via the attorney and via certified mail. And mandatory, the unit owner should have a minimum of 30 days to respond to any of the notices of violations.
Now,
some of the other things, again, that we have here, and this is one of the ones that's really highly controversial. One of the things was discussed is that one of the members had put in here that he wanted to see some type of criminal background check done on board members to make sure that their past was in place and that people knew what they were voting on. One other recommendation, this one we don't know whether it'll hold water or not, would be to possibly ask for what they call a financial disclosure of the board members that currently are existing. Another thing is we were talking about creating a condo and homeowners bill of rights where, you know, it should have a comprehensive bill which will have sections on how the state addresses and protects their rights and concerns. We're also talking about merging the CAMs into the condo division. And when it comes to special assessments, we are working on establishing clear guidelines for special assessments, Sue, because there is something that's happening down here in South Florida. We got these personal situations where we talked about these people that don't understand, you know, or can't read English. You got a lot of seniors that don't understand the legal portion of it. Hopefully with somebody like the ombudsman and people like that working with them, they will be able to help these folks and hopefully will help them keep their units and not have it swept from under them when it comes to special assessments and liens and foreclosures.
Okay, first of all, you know, I would say absolutely no fines and no foreclosures. I mean, that's you wouldn't give a gun to a two-year-old.
Absolutely.
Why give these boards and these associations those kinds of powers? But on the assessments, the special assessments, Julia, how about having a majority affirmative vote or a supermajority affirmative vote by the owners?
Well, this is what we have, and again, I'm just getting to the small bits and pieces. It would be by a majority vote of all unit owners.
Okay, and it's got to be affirmative. So
it has to be affirmative. That's correct. And by the way, again, this is something that we have been getting already some negative emails from people claiming or misunderstanding this and saying that you're taking away our power to file liens and to foreclose on unit owners that are a problem within our community. And, Sue, I just want to make it very clear that that's not the goal here.
Say it again, the people who are a problem. So, I mean, you could be, black or Indian or Hispanic or Jewish, and then you could be a problem and we need to foreclose on you?
Well, now you see exactly why I'm saying that we're establishing clear guidelines.
All
and the
right.
guidelines, those will be some of the things that will be addressed because you're absolutely right. That goes on. And I got to tell you, there's something going on down here in South Florida. I don't know if your listeners have it happening in their states, but one thing that we have down here, we have board members that have been able to buy multiple units that have gone into foreclosure while they were board members.
Yes.
What is going on here?
Well,
these are the things that we're hoping to nip in the bud, as we say.
Well, you know, there's a foreclosure that just happened in, I mean, I've got loads of foreclosures from around the country. The latest is out of California, where the collection agent foreclosed to collect $1.50.
We got that email, and I think that email circulated all over the United States. And I got to tell you, those are the same emails that I took and forwarded to all the legislative body. Again, with my little note, now do you see why we need to beef up and correct these current laws? Those are the kind of emails that I wish people would send me and would send my state representatives and their state representatives.
If you let me know, give me, you know, make sure that we have email addresses. I have tons of them that I can send you.
Well, I tell you what, it's very easy. In the state of Florida, it's just the, it's of course the www.myflorida.com. When anybody goes into there, they will get the breakdowns of your governor, your cabinet, your senators, your representatives, and just about every agency you can imagine. It will all be under that website. And as far as the House is concerned, us personally, we're www.myfloridahouse.com. Very easy
okay.
Access to the information that people need.
Okay, well, we'll make sure that you get some of these emails. I want to talk about another one of your recommendations, and you've got here that no caps exist on attorney fees.
That's correct.
And they can.
That's one that I've got to tell you that let me give you an example, because I think examples are the best way. One of the things that we found, and we were very upset, is that, for instance, in certain areas where people are retired on fixed income, let's say they accidentally or legitimately had a fine, we have found out that form letters that attorneys use have been, let's say it's a $70 fine. The form letter has been basically a $200 charge,
mm-hmm.
And now you have a $275 fine.
Yeah.
You're paying more for the form letter that the attorney sent out than the actual fine for the problem that you had. And again, it's wrong. It's lopsided. Now, we went to different places in Orlando. We met, and in Orlando they would tell us, well, we only charge $75 for that form letter. Down in South Florida, they charge $200 for the form letter.
Let me tell you, I mean, that happens a lot. And let me tell you what happens. The attorneys go to the board members, and they say, you just turn it over to us. It won't cost you a dime. We will take care of it because we'll get the homeowner to pay our costs. So, again, you know, first letter goes out, $200. Push the button the second time. Second letter goes out, $300, an additional $300. And before you know it, they've racked up all these fees. How about instead of capping them, because these guys are going to, you know, these guys are going to find a way around it. They'll just send out more letters. But how about if the association sends out these letters and uses an attorney to write their correspondence for them, they may not pass the cost along to the homeowner, that the association has to pay for it.
Well, see, this is one of the, again, you don't have the detail. One of the things that we were discussing, if there's a law firm on a retainer representing that association, that one of the recommendations would be either capping or not passing the cost on to the unit owners in general, unless it's an abusive unit owner that had multiple, fines and was not really responding to them, then he would be subject to receiving the attorney fees on whatever form letters. We want to make sure, Shu, that we don't pass this on. And I got to tell you, this is the reason why the law firms are coming out already to lobby against this legislation, because they don't want anything done. Because as I keep saying,
surprise,
want to shoot the proverbial goose to lay the golden egg for these folks that represent the associations. And you know what? I'm not politically correct. I'm just saying it like it is. And I'm for free enterprise as long as people are fair. But what's happening is absolutely lopsided and not fair. These folks who own these units are getting killed with these, you know, lopsided fines and with everything else that's tacked into it, and gets them to the point where we say they've got one foot in and one foot out of their door.
It is. You're absolutely right. And you're right that it's lopsided, and you're right that it's not fair. And there's so many horror stories out there, so many things that are being done that it's just incredible. I mean, people are being disqualified from voting because the management company decides that if certain people get on the board, then their job is at risk. Attorneys walk in there, and you know, there's some really decent, good attorneys, and I know some of them, and I also know some that are not so good. But by and large, these guys are going in there and gouging, just absolutely cleaning out the members, and you know, they're basically stuck. You get the elderly, you get you know, people who are first-time homeowners, you get people who think that they've got their foot in the door of the American dream, and all of a sudden they're out on the street.
Well, the sad part about this is that, again, that a lot of times people walk in, and when I say walk in, they'll buy into a condo or homeowner association environment and not know what they're walking into. And the horror stories from the liens that they get hit with, but more importantly, these special assessments, which are really killing these folks these days, which are out of control. They call them all emergency, you know, situations so that they don't have to go out and go through the bid process. There's so many ways that people are circumventing, you know, the mm-hmm. situation. And one thing I'm glad you brought up, Sue, is that I also will tell you there's a lot of great law firms and a lot of great attorneys out there doing work in defense of those who are getting caught in this dilemma.
Yeah.
So I want to make that clear, because a lot of people say, well, Mr. Robina, you're very unfair. All you do is you attack the attorneys. You know what? We know which law firms and which groups out there are taking advantage of the public, and then we know which ones are the good ones who are representing associations properly, and which are the good lawyers and law firms that are actually even doing pro bono work at times, because they just cannot believe what their industry is doing at times. So
well,
I wanted to make that very clear for the record.
I often have them on, you know, the people who are working. I mean, one of the people is Barry Silver down there, working very hard to represent George Andres. Another guy you have down there is a guy by the name of Blaine Carneal.
Blaine Carneal, I've had the honor of meeting him. And again, that's why I will tell you, you cannot label all law firms or all attorneys the same way.
Absolutely.
You have people like Blaine Carneal that I think this man can't even get a good night's sleep because he's so bothered about what goes on. And I got to tell you, Blaine is one of those that has given us suggestions that are being implemented into our legislation on the issue of liens and how these issues will be addressed from now on. And I got to tell you, there's a lot more Blaine Carneals out there and the attorneys that really can help out and at this time probably be able to get involved. And if they have the opportunity for some pro bono work, this particular situation sure needs you.
Well, yeah, and there are people, there are some attorneys like Blaine and like Barry Silver who will do it. And so I'm always a little reluctant to say, hey, you know, kill all the, you know, quoting Shakespeare, kill all the attorneys, because I know there's some really, really good ones.
There sure are. There sure
and
are.
And for those of them out there, you know, thank you, because you're saving the reputation of your brethren. Julia, would you believe that we're almost out of time? You've got about 1 minute left to tell us what, you know, if there's anything in particular, any message you want to send out.
I'd like
there?
To send a very strong message to those that are listening. This problem is not only happening here in the state of Florida, it's happening all around the United States. I need, for those that are listening, whether you're in the state of Florida or not, to please help us by starting what I call the groundswell, sending those emails, contacting people, uniting, and helping us battle the special interests that will now try to prevent any legislation that will happen in the state of Florida, which, by the way, whatever comes out of here, due to the wonderful world of the Internet, we're able to communicate with other states and we share information on what we're doing to help people out. Please get involved. Get those emails going. Get the phone calls going. And help us make these necessary changes, Sue, that we need in order to, at the end of the day, protect the unit owners.
You will have my email. I did send one to the governor, and I will be happy to forward that to you. And you will have my email. So you heard him, folks. You know, everybody get out there and send in these emails and let them know exactly what's going on. And don't worry about people telling you they don't want to hear the horror stories. They're just isolated incidents. There are too many isolated incidents out there. We don't buy into that theory anymore. Julio, thank you so very, very much for joining us.
And thank you for the opportunity, Sue. I appreciate it.
I hope you have a wonderful Valentine's Day with the rest of your day.
Well, I'm having a great one.
All right. Well, I thank you for joining me on here for Valentine's
thank
Day.
Thank you, and happy Valentine's Day to you and all your listeners.
Thank you very much, Julio. And the rest on the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. Stay tuned and stay free and see y'all next week.